Hey, welcome to Bustin' Balls. I'm Pat Caputo along with the webmaster, Evan Jenkins. We're here all the time to talk about drafts, prospects, and the future. And, we had nothing to do with that coolest logo in the history of podcasts, but it is really nice.
Well, we had the name, so I guess
we had the name, Bustin' Balls. You know, we came up with that. So, but it's about drafts, prospects, and the future. And what is the future of this 2025 Tiger team? And sometimes you learn a lot about the future by looking at the past. And the Tigers, there's a definite mind frame. You know, I have this because I'm old enough to remember. I was in elementary school, but I remember it when the Tigers in 68 won. I was just out of college and had just started my media career in 84 when the Tigers won. Of course, the years in which they won those two pennants, six playoff series, I shouldn't say. They won more than six playoff games, but they knocked the Yankees out three times. Covered that and remember it well. And looking at the Tigers here right now, looking up what their record is, after 67 games, and I put this up on X, Pat Caputo 98 on X, they have the same record as the 68 Tigers. They have the same record as the 2006 Tigers. And really, they hold the largest division lead that the Tigers have held in the expansion era, the second expansion era, 1969 forward. Actually, the 68 Tigers, even though they weren't in a division, it was the whole league, had a little bit bigger lead. But they had the same record, the Tigers, currently right now. So we're talking about an unprecedented, to a large degree, start. This doesn't happen every day. And yet, I don't know, like if you were to say, Evan, and I know you're familiar with these players, is there a Miguel Cabrera on this team?
No.
Is there Justin Verlander on this team?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Well, he's certainly – Verlander never had a year as good as that, even the year he won MVP, I don't think.
That MVP, it was Triple Crown. He did it all as
yeah.
well. So.
Yeah, and he won Rookie of the Year. Scherzer? Scherzer on those
there's
teams.
There's no Scherzer.
There's not a combination of the two. There's no Scherzer, Anibal Sanchez.
No David Justin Price. Verland. No Rick Porcello.
Yeah, well.
Maybe a Porcello. He didn't really get his Cy Young until he left for Boston.
Yeah, and also Reese Olson's been pretty good. Jack Flaherty's not bad.
No, not at all. He's your Sanchez, then, I guess.
Yeah, that kind of.
Strikeouts.
Yeah, and so there isn't – you look at that team, it had Pudge for a while. Then it had Maglio Ordóñez for a while.
Gerald Laird. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, they had a few guys like that, too. It had
Prince Fielder. Was
Carlos Guillen.
Yeah.
Prince Fielder was there for a while. Austin Jack.
Victor Martinez.
Curtis Granderson, J.D. Martinez.
Right, just flat-out cut from Houston.
Nick Castellanos turned out to be a very productive major leaguer. During that particular year, he came at the end of it.
Austin Jackson was a great center
fielder. Terrific center fielder. Placido Polanco, Ian Kinsler.
Johnny Damon.
No, that was one of those Scott Boros talking Mike Ilitch
in
this
sign. Yes, that
was a failed sign. So was Prince, actually. But
Torrey Hunter.
Torrey Hunter's another one. And they tried a lot with bullpen. And
Joe Nathan,
K-Rod. Benoit.
K-Rod, that was one.
El Papa Grande.
El Papa Grande, that year, he didn't blow a save the entire year.
Yeah, but Evan, you look up his record. He was 0-6. So every time he pitched in the ninth inning.
If it wasn't a safe situation, it was going bad.
He would lose the decision. So that team... Those teams, now they win the championship, but they seemed more star-powered. And this team has performed over a period of time now. It's a pretty big sample size, as good or better than that team ever did in the regular season, and even in the postseason to a degree, because they did win that series against Houston, and they did take it to five games against the Guardians last year. How do they compare? Now, are we underestimating Riley Green? Is Riley Green going to be one of those players? Is Torc going to be one of those players? Because Torc has come back a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Kerry Carpenter, Kerry Carpenter puts up some big numbers as an offensive force.
Can I say one thing that offends me?
What?
So when talking Kerry Carpenter, he is a very, very, very nice player for this Tigers team. But when people call him Kerry Bonds, I think it's such a flat-out disrespect to the actual player in Barry Bonds, a guy that for his career had a .419 on-base percentage against lefties, where Kerry Carpenter can't hit him at all. I'm sorry. It's a little thing that's been irritating me.
No, I don't like it either. When I hear it said at, during the broadcast or
kills
whatever.
Me, Pat.
But it's the way the broadcasts go.
I get it. But you're comparing him to the greatest left.
I know. I understand that. And really, that started actually organically from the clubhouse.
Yeah.
With the players calling him that. With some sarcasm to it. They weren't,
know.
You know. But it is.
I had to get it off my chest.
It is a bit much.
But to your point, those two in Carp, Torque, and Green, those could be superstars in the making.
Could be, especially with Green and maybe in Torque.
Yeah.
You know, Carpenter's in like his, approaching his late 20s. He's in the prime of his prime right now. But those other players, they have, you know, the prime of ball player, you know, it depends on how you look at it. 26 to 32 or 27 to 33. I tend to think it's more like 26, 27, and to 32. At 32, it usually, if you look at their stats, and there's no definitive here. You can come up with a lot of examples of it, you know, not being that way. But usually, if you look at a player, you always notice, not always, but most of the time, a lot of the time, a high percentage of the time, that 28 to 30 is usually when they're in their sweet spot. So Kerry Carpenter is entering that. Casey Mize on the pitching staff, we don't talk about him, but Casey Mize has really come on this year. So because we've had the disappointments of, you know, the growing pains of some of these players as they've gone through the system. But if you look at this team, their bullpen seems to be better than certainly it was in that era of Leland.
Seems that way.
But, of course, that isn't why they ended up dropping those World Series. They dropped the World Series because they're starting pitching.
And they couldn't hit.
And they stopped hitting. So that combination of the two, JV did not. He was great in the playoffs until the World Series. Kung Fu Panda got him.
Three home runs.
Right, and certainly in 2006, he had a couple bad starts when he was a rookie. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. But are we underestimating the team? But certainly when we're looking at it, and there's more balance on this team. That team was, you mentioned Jackson or Granderson who would be out there.
Yeah.
They had good center fielders. But Maglio wasn't exactly a star right fielder, and whoever they had in left field was usually challenged. And they seemed to struggle with that. And certainly, you know, when they had the shortstops that they had, we forgot about Johnny Peralta, you know.
Johnny Peralta was an excellent player. I mean, even Delmon Young for that team, I think he might have played left
field.
Well,
that's the other thing, and that's part of what I'm talking about with trade deadline deals. They can go either way. And that's what I'm writing my column about.
You could get him or you could get,
Aubrey Huff and Jared. But at the time, they got Aubrey Huff and Jared Washburn.
They were great players.
It looked like it was going to – and Aubrey Huff eventually with the Giants.
Won a World Series.
And came through for him. Right. So, but the Tigers always had statues at short. But I don't know. When Baez plays, he's playing better. But this team, you know, Trey Sweeney and whatever, that's not a discernible upgrade. And certainly Peralta was better than both those guys. And Renteria struggled the year he was here.
Yeah.
And catcher, I think the Tigers have really good catching right now. But Alex Avila wasn't bad. I know he got a bad name because of his dad and everything, but he was an all-star.
Absolutely.
And did some good things. And before that, they had Pudge, who still had a little bit of a tire left on the tread. So looking at it, I this team has as good a record. This team has done things, but I don't know if it's as good as those teams.
Well, it's funny.
Those teams.
Because last week when we were talking on Bustin' Balls, I said it's so hard to convince me that this team is better than, like, the 14 team that flamed out against the Orioles. And I sat back and I thought about it while watching the Tigers, and I think the main difference is there was a glaring hole on all those teams, and it was the bullpen. And it seemed like they could never address it as much as they tried to address it. Where it seems like the Tigers' holes this year, it seems like...
But they didn't lose that series to the Orioles because of that.
No, it was pitching.
They lost the series because Osmus, because Verlander, remember, started to have some problems with his core. He wasn't the same.
Right.
He missed some time. And he gave him the first start instead of Scherzer in Baltimore. And that put him behind the eight ball because he wasn't as good as Scherzer at the time.
No, and that was a big dynamic.
And then when Scherzer didn't win his start, they were behind the eight ball, and then they had game three and Price pitched. The other thing is they were in that third game.
Oh, absolutely. Wasn't there a big home run at the end or something?
No, what he did is he brought in Anibal Sanchez. And Anibal Sanchez threw 30 pitches, but he had missed a lot of time. And he was just mowing him down, and he's like, "Well, there are 30 pitches," and they brought in, I think it was Jabba Chamberlain, and you know what that was like?
Oh yeah,
the Rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that the Tigers were done. So that was, what happened. I'm doing this off the top of my head, if I remember, but I remember watching it, and so it was never really the super bullpen issue. It was, and Leland in the 2012 World Series, for whatever reason, he decided to hit Quentin Berry second in the lineup. And Leland was still trying to figure out why Tony La Russa was hitting good hitters second.
Yeah.
And his good buddy didn't share the information that's where the hitters come up with the most key situations late in the game. And this information was around for 5 or 6 years, but the Tigers were so far behind on it, I don't think it ever equated to Jim. You know, he was still thinking in his mind, my best bullpen is if my starter gets 7 or 8 innings, you know. So, and I'm not knocking Jim. Jim was a great manager. It's just he was a little behind there.
Yeah.
So he put Quentin Berry second. You know, he's got some speed. He can bunt or whatever, which is stupid, okay? And when you look at an analytics, and every time there was a key situation, Quentin Berry had come up. You know, and he had tapped the ball in front of the plate or something like that. Or, you know, it was just,
Boy, was he a cult hero, though, man.
Oh, he's still winning games for the Tigers. You see him mess up that play at third base the other day?
No.
He's a third base coach for the Cubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Pete Crow Armstrong, who's like, you know, you talk about some twitch muscles. It's Pete Crow Armstrong.
That's great.
Oh, he's incredible. So he comes whipping around third base, and Quentin Berry's the third base coach for the Cubs. And he's like, Hogo. The guy stumbles out, and the Tigers get out of the inning. That's the reason they won that first game of that series, because of Quentin Berry. So he's still winning some games for the Tigers.
That's so good, man.
All right, people used to get so pissed at me when I would talk about him. Oh, God. I'd go, Leland knows he's a 4A player. What are y'all talking about? But he did become a cult hero.
Oh, yeah. He had the jersey T-shirts made for him and everything. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But it's a name that slips your mind until you bring it up, and you're like, oh, yeah.
He's a third base coach of the Cubs.
But I just...
Oh, by the way, man, you know, I know you like stuff like this.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Little Big League?
Oh, yeah.
You know who's the little shaver guy that managed the Twins?
Yes, he managed the Twins. Yeah, his grandfather passed away, and then he became the owner and ended up being the
manager. Remember his mother in that?
I do remember her.
Yeah, that's Pete Crow Armstrong's mother.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
That blew my mind. When did you learn that one? Have you been sitting on that this whole time?
No, I remember when he was drafted and everything. His father's like an actor, producer, writer type of guy, too.
Wow.
Ashley Crow, Pete Crow Armstrong's mom. Now it comes up instead of Little Big League and, you know, whatever.
That's her, Ashley Crow.
Yeah,
64.
Ashley Crow. It's like, son, Pete Crow Armstrong.
Wow. So, okay, you just blew my mind. I'm sorry, I'll get over it.
I know, but that's the type of thing you like.
And
buddy.
She already had the experience of being a mom to a pro ball player.
That's right.
Of this movie.
Yeah.
And it's such a good movie. I've watched that thing so many times.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. I didn't mind that one.
And the guy from Home Alone's in it is one of the bench coaches.
Yeah, there's a lot of like actors before they were actor
types
it's
great,
or whatever. So
great pull, man. And she's like me, so she started a little late. in life with the kids. So good.
Well, you know, that's good. That's good. So anyway, just on that, now the 84 Tigers, okay? And I don't know how familiar you are with the 84 Tigers.
I'm very bitter about the 84 Tigers because by the time I got to watch Lou and Tram, they were a shell of themselves.
Right.
To be quite honest. Jack Morris was winning World Series for the Twins and the Blue Jays,
right,
not the Tigers.
Right. When you were
Cecil
born.
Fielder ended up because, well, Cecil wasn't on that team, but just, it just, no, by the time I was old enough to realize.
Yeah, the Tigers are kind of boring.
7, 8 years old in the early 90s.
Yeah,
I mean,
all they did
it
was slug.
It was Tony Phillips, Rob Deer. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
They were a shell of themselves by the time I learned who Lou and Tram was. So when I see all the love affair for them and I see their stats and everything and they played since 77, yada, yada, they just weren't those guys when I started going to baseball games and really paying attention.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And again, it's talking about like how much potential does this team have to win a World Series when you look at that particular group, which they were just entering. All those guys came up, went through their struggles together. They had brilliant drafts in the mid to late 70s, and they were right in their prime, and they hit the jackpot that particular year. Now, that team started out 35-5. And after 67 games, when we're doing this particular podcast, they were 49-18. So they had gone 14-13 after their 35-5 start, and they were only 6.5 games up. So this team is 7 games up, is actually in a better position in terms of winning the division than that team was, although it doesn't have the same record. And that obviously was the best start that any team. It's always going to be that
way. No, it's always going to be mentioned.
You know, for a long time. So the bottom line about this is that in that particular team, looking at their personnel, I don't see how this team even remotely compares. Now, I don't know if that's fair. Jack Morris never had a year. He never won a Cy Young Award, anything like that, like what Scoobles have last year and the way he's been this year. He was at times really, really good. And he did have some scoreless inning streaks and some things, but never dominant like this. Never to that degree, except in the postseason, where he pitched 2 complete game victories.
In that series?
Yeah, 84? And I believe he went 7 innings in the championship series. That team was 7-1 in the postseason. They only had to win 2 series, 1-3 out of 5, and then won, you know, 7 game series.
I'm pretty confident that Tarek won't do that in the playoffs.
So that's pretty dominant, right?
Yes.
And the shortstop combination there and the center field combination and the catching combination. You know, they always talk about strength up the middle. Dingler's really good, you know, I think.
Yeah,
that.
But Lance Parrish was
Parker Meadows, I think he's a better center fielder defensively than Chet Lemon, which is saying a lot because Chet Lemon was really good in center. But hitting-wise, Chet Lemon was a better hitter. I mean, certainly more proven and a veteran player. And Tram and Lou, man, Torres and whoever they have at short, no comparison.
No, and I think Torres is an unbelievably great addition to this team for this year. But
he's not
a
friggin' 1984 version of Lou Whitaker.
No, and he started off like really, really hot, and he's seen a lot of pitches. The power isn't
can't
there.
Can't feel
which,
like that.
No. But he had a nice play the other night with a little glove flip to second. And
that was a nice play.
He's a nice – I mean, that hole at second base would be pretty glaring right now, wouldn't it, though, Pat, if he wasn't there? I mean, Cole Keith is nice, but now they're trying him out at third base as well, so it makes you wonder about the Vierling injury with his shoulder. And hearing him talk, I mean, he's a young kid, Cole Keith, what, 22, 23 years old. And the fact that they were like, well, his arm is just now good enough to throw across the diamond. And I'm like, what the hell? I thought all baseball players should have an arm.
I don't know whether he'll be able to do that.
Isn't that wild, though, to think about as a Major League Baseball player to not be able to throw that distance?
Well, it's because he hurt himself.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, you know, and I don't know what the shoulder, and we've talked about this before, is a very complex joint. And there is, like, a simple, like, Tommy John surgery, which is anything but simple. But players come back from it after a while. And position,
now especially, yeah.
And position players, it's not quite as glaring as with the pitcher. But Colt Keith, and I've said this before, he was recruited at Arizona State not only to play third base, which was going to be his position, but also to pitch. He had a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. Because I went back and looked at, you know, on the perfect game and all those things when he played in the summer, he had a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, and he had a good arm. They did play him at second and third because I think they were trying to figure out different. But third base, he could definitely play. That's the natural position given his body type and the fact that he's a hitter. I don't have any doubt he can catch the ball, but I have a lot of doubt whether he can throw because you can't hide that anymore. Baseball savant, you know, Statcast, whatever you want to determine it, he's in the bottom 15 percentile this year again in throwing velocity. He was in the bottom 10% last year. And you say, well, he's playing second base. Well, that's a good point. But if you ever watch him turn a double play, when have you ever seen him really zing the ball over to first?
You haven't, and even at the start of the year, you saw the problems he had throwing to first, even.
And I, looking at some of the video, there was some video posted of him working out, throwing, you know, which the Tigers probably aren't happy about because they're trying to it didn't look too good him throwing. So it's not his fault. It's not like he didn't have a strong arm. He dove back to first base on a play when he was an A-ball. And it hurt his shoulder. So I don't know. He said, I read the quote, that he, you know, has done 3 years of rehab and feels that. But that is a very key point as to whether they're going to need a third baseman.
Yeah.
You know, if he can play third base, and I don't have any doubt that he'd be pretty good over there. That's his position, actually. If he can make that throw. And that's a hard throw, Evan, because there's the angle of it.
No, I understand it, but we're talking about the best of the best that are
Right. Well, there's a lot of major league players who play in middle infield and stuff who can't play third.
God, the head cases, that's a baseball player, man.
And it's hard position because you either make the play or you don't. But I like his aspect that way. And, look, he's a tough kid.
Yeah.
You can see that. He battles through everything. You know, he really cares. So if he can do it, he'll do it. But that's a key factor in what they're going to do trade-wise. But if you compare to 84, this team doesn't have a third baseman either. That team always would go back to Tom Brookins, who was solid. In the World Series, they played Marty Castillo. The best prospect they had, they ended up getting rid of Hojo, Howard Johnson. But he wasn't ready.
Great hotels.
He wasn't ready at that time. When you look at the Tigers of the other era that we talked about, the Leland era, you know, it was Inge, did a pretty good job there for a while. Definitely fell out of favor with the fans, I think that would be safe to say.
But if there was one thing you could always say is he played great defense.
He did. He was a good defender, and they had, you know, some issues at third base as well. And in the outfield, like the 84 Tigers, we talked about center. Left field, Riley Green's a better player than Larry Herndon was at that stage of his career. The question is, the Tigers really didn't, you know, they had Herndon, but they also had Gibby and Wright. And, you know, Gibby was in his prime. He was a multidimensional threat.
Superior athlete.
Superior. I mean, incredible athlete, like Bo Jackson-like athlete.
That's what I mean, just superior.
But he wasn't a great defender. You know, okay. He made a throw, the relay throw to Lou to cut down the guy in the World Series, but that was Lou's arm, you know, that did that. He had an incredible arm, Lou Whitaker. Gibby was a below-average defender, but big-time power. So I would say that, you know, he's throwing out some guys. He's got a good arm.
Yeah,
man.
Surprised me. I didn't expect to see
I don't know if you knew this, but he's been in the top 15 percentile in arm strength in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that was
And he's a plus runner.
That was a seed he threw.
Yeah, he's a better athlete than people give him credit for. He can hit lefties, too, but if they gave him the opportunity to do it.
Well, should they now that you have a little bit of a lead? Like,
I would do it.
I just – Well, obviously they stopped the Andy and Banez experiment.
Well,
so.
he hasn't raked against lefties.
And that's your one job.
That's the one job that he had, so they send him down. I don't know. But I do think Carpenter should get more shots doing that. So
I root for him. I root for Tor. I root for the whole damn team. You know, I still have a problem getting over A.J. Hinch and what happened in Houston.
Eventually.
Yeah, I got a big problem with
you really
integrity of sport. Yeah, I don't know why. but I do. I hated it then, and I can't just be like, well, he's with us now, so I'm okay with it.
Well,
I'll get over it eventually.
I do have some concerns about the Tigers in a sense. It's kind of related to the Astros, and it's kind of related to the Scott Harris, Ivy League, you know, GM mentality in the game. And I do have some issues with that. But as far as Hinch is concerned, and why I never, ever had a problem with him with this, is of all the people that were involved in that, who was the one person that said, hey, look, all right, I didn't want, this is bad, okay? I understand it's bad. You know, he was suspended for a year. It's going to be one of the first things that's mentioned about him forever, you know, you know, it's probably one of the lead things on his Wikipedia page.
I'm sure it is.
You know, and all that. And he's got, but he was contrite, appropriately contrite. He didn't duck the issue like Luthlow, their
The GM.
GM.
Yeah.
And well, you know, and he's like, now he's like a soccer guru in England.
Well, it seemed like him and Alex Cora were the two people that took the brunt of everything. No players got penalized or anything, even though they're the ones.
Well,
that
they were the ones that were in it. Hinge, he didn't implement that as much as turn a blind eye to it. But there's no defense for.
No, and maybe it might have to do with the steroids too. That, you know, I grew up in that era, and Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire were the biggest things ever. But yet, they're held to a standard that, like, A.J. Hinch and those Houston Astros weren't. Like, all
Hinch was held to it.
No. I get it, but for a year, where these guys are blackballed for the rest of their lives
right.
in baseball, to where they benefited from personal stats. The Astros benefited from a World Series. And so I guess that's my difference, and it might be nitpicky or whatever, and I will get over it eventually, and a World Series might help that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, for right now, I can't be like, let's put all these all steroid users into the Hall of Fame, but then let them get a free pass with a year suspension. It seems weird to me. That's all. Like Barry Bonds was, let's be honest, he was blackballed out of baseball at the end of his career. He probably still could have played.
But wasn't he a hitting coach or something with the
Marlins?
Yeah,
yeah.
They made sure they rigged the deck so that he wouldn't get in.
100%.
Roger Clemens.
And it just, that bothers me. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, once they started getting enough of a percentage where there was even remotely a threat, they had Joe Morgan, who was still alive at the time, send out, you know, some memo to all these writers, and that basically quelled that. And then they limited it from 15 years to 10 years, and it knocked them off the ballot. Well, don't get me going on the Hall of Fame.
No, I get it. I'm just saying.
You know, I'm not happy.
I just have a problem.
I have a problem with the Hall of Fame that the all-time hits leader. Okay, more hits than anybody. Yeah, no, but he has more hits than anybody. He's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, they say he can get in now, him and Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, after he dies.
I'm like, sweet.
Yeah, and then they went on the Shoeless Joe thing. Like, Shoeless Joe died in 1951. So, like, the whole thing about, like, Pete Rose couldn't do anything now, that's been, you know, with Shoeless Joe since 1951. when he was running his liquor store in Asheville, North Carolina, and Ty Cobb happened to wander in.
Wow.
It's just bad. Barry Bonds, all-time home run leader,
Roger
best pitcher.
Clemens.
You know, I love Maddox, so it's hard for me to say this, but the best pitcher I think that I've ever seen is Roger Clemens, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. You know, A-Rod doesn't get in. You know, because, and A-Rod's one of the top 20 players of all time. Way better than Derek Jeter ever was.
Yes.
Has nearly twice the WAR, and or at least two-thirds, at least a third more WAR. And, you know, you're just sitting there looking at this, and it's like, you know, it's supposed to be objective, and it's very subjective, and the decks are kind of slanted to make it what they want it to be. So, I have a problem with the Hall of Fame, which Harold Baines is in because Jerry Reinsdorf and Tony La Russa were on the committee when he was there in a 12 thing, and Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame. I mean, what a crock of.
And so,
well, I can say it on our podcast, a crock of shit.
No, and it is. And I just thought all cheating within baseball should be created equal, and it's not. And I guess that's where my problem is.
Yeah, and well, and the problem I have with it is because I don't think, but I know there are a bunch of dudes up there taking their Hall of Fame platitudes, you know, in Cooperstown, who did steroids every bit as much as the others.
Or managers that benefited from these guys on their team. I mean, Jim Leland with Barry Bonds, obviously he wasn't doing it in Pittsburgh, but you can't tell me that his Hall of Fame and MVPs that he won in Pittsburgh didn't lead to Jim Leland then being, I mean, Pudge was always named in it. He benefited here in Detroit or in Florida where they won a World Series. And
the Pudge was amazing that one year when they started testing. He went from like 200.
Skinny Pudge.
Yeah. And then weirdly, he almost won the home run hitting contest.
Oh, yeah. Here at Comerica in 2006.
Yeah. Bobby Abreu beat him.
But
so.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
But that's why I have a problem with AJ. That's all it is.
Okay. Yeah. But just to the point of it, with this particular group, it's hard for me to put them in the same category with those teams, and I kind of wonder how that's all going to play out, but I wonder who's going to be who ultimately out of this particular group, because those teams, they didn't really have – they had flaws. The one team couldn't field and was too many right-handed hitters and had bullpen issues. The 84 Tigers were kind of lacking in a certain way, but it was a different era. Morris would throw a lot more innings. And Petrie, their number two, and Milt Wilcox, their number three. Definitely they had to, you know, in particular in 84, Willie Hernandez had a once-in-a-lifetime generational year MVP and Cy Young Award winner. And they had a great setup man in Senor Smoke, Aurelio Lopez. That's a great nickname, isn't it?
So good.
Senor Smoke. You know, I remember being in the clubhouse, like one of the first times I was in there. And Lance Parrish was, like, wise beyond his years, man. He was, like, this huge guy, and he just had a presence. So you'd always go talk to Lance, and I followed the other writers over there to talk to Lance. And it was, Lopez kept throwing his fastball, and, like, George Brett or somebody hit it out. And, I remember a writer asking him about, well, you know, he kept throwing those fastballs. And Lance just kind of looked up, and he says, well, you know, he shook me off. He said, and, you know, Senor Smoke's going to be Senor Smoke. He's going to want to throw that fastball. So I just thought it was kind of cool the way he said it.
It is cool.
You know, but, yeah. But anyway, that's how I look. And now 68, that team it had a Hall of Famer in Al Kaline who wasn't in his prime. And it had a lot of, I would say, the Hall of Very Good players. Mickey Lolich, who won three games in the World Series. Totally different era, though, you know. This game seven on 2 days rest. You know, that's pretty amazing. And but he, you know, a lot of people are, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Eh, if you look at his numbers, no. But he's definitely had a wonderful career. Bill Freehand, the catcher, was a great player. But not quite Hall of Fame caliber, although Bill Freehand, the people from that time, I'm in the baby boom generation, Evan, but at the end.
Okay.
The people in the earlier part of it, they are, like, they love Bill Freehand, and they love Mickey Lolich. And the 68 Tigers, they think they should be in the Hall of Fame, those two guys. But I'm looking at it as a baseball writer, and I do remember them. They were at the tail end of their careers when I really got to.
Yeah, so and I've they studied were your Lou and Tram.
I've studied that. That team too. All the World Series games are up there, and read about it, and talked to, you know, like the people that were around it a lot, and on the team. I know a lot of those guys down through the years. Too many of them are passing now, but it had a lot of, you know, a lot of just really good players. Jim Northrup, Mickey Stanley.
Denny McClain was on that team.
Well, Denny
too,
McClain
right?
had, you know, was one of the great pitchers. You know, it kind of sad what happened ultimately to him because he had the, he had just had incredible talent. He and Mickey Lolich had, if they were pitching today, they would be great. There's no question about that. And all the players on that 68 team, the Dick McAuliffe's, the Freehands, Jim Northrup, Mickey Stanley, certainly Al Kaline.
Horton?
Willie Horton. Gosh, he was tremendous that year. 36 home runs, of course, throughout Brock at the plate in the World Series. Those guys would all be good, great players today. They would all be comparable. Same with the 84 team. So it wasn't a bunch of players whose skills would not transition to today's game. Now, it might be different ways of things, but those guys – and they're all real good all-around players. They have pretty good defense on that team. And it's hard for me to imagine this team being as good. Now, it's the same with 84. It's the same with, you know, the teams that, you know, you're so familiar with.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine this team being that good. But the numbers
suggest that they are, right?
You know, and I don't know if those players in that particular era, you know, would have had the stature that they ended up getting without developing into that. Now, a lot of those players made all-star games, like McAuliffe and Horton and Denny McClain made all-star games before 68. A freehand was an all-star catcher like every year because there weren't any really good catchers in the American League, and he was pretty good. And, you know, so this team hasn't had a lot of all-stars. You know, Skubalin, Green last year. That's pretty much it from this group, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if Torres has played in the All-Star game previous where he was.
He did with the Yankees, yes.
Yeah.
So, but it was early on in his career.
I would assume. I mean, he had 38 home runs one year and all that.
And he was a Yankee.
Yeah, and he was a Yankee. So, you know, he was a big time when he came up. You know, it's like, oh, remember John Sterling? Labor Day, oh.
I remember when Matthew Boyd and people talked about trading him is that Al wanted Torres from the Yankees. And the Yankees were like, no way.
No, they weren't going to do that. But ended up. Up, he kind of faded, but it was a good signing for the Tigers. But it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And hey, look, like us on the Apple iTunes store, like us at the Google Play store, subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcasts. Odyssey.com, you can always get it. And don't forget Pat Caputo 98 on X, Gent Mint Jenkins on X for Evan. And like I told Evan, and I tell you all every week, I'm on Blue Sky now.
Oh, that's right.
I'm on Blue Sky now. I'm hitting that 200 mark and skyrocketing there. No, seriously, if you're on Blue Sky, follow me there. And, of course, you can get 97.1 The Ticket Facebook page. And my Facebook page, I put this up there. So it's available to you in a lot of different ways. And we appreciate you listening. We get into a little bit more of the, you know, details, and it's always good to have a discussion with Evan because he makes the podcast in a lot of ways because he asks a lot of questions that fans would ask to me, and we discuss it and go back and forth, and I get some of your feelings in that, so I'm not just, you know, going into my total baseball geekism, just
right.
You know, or hockey or the NFL or college sports. Or basketball and all that. So, but anyway, we appreciate you. Until next time, we'll talk to you.